Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And today, my very special guest is Nancy Cassidy. Nancy is a Democrat challenging incumbent Congressman Scott Peters, also a Democrat, in the March primary. Nancy, welcome to the show.
Very glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Now, this is the 52nd district. Not to be confused, listeners, we know Duncan Hunter's district used to be the 52nd. Now it's the 50th. And the 52nd is now represented by Congressman Peters. Nancy, can you tell us what areas the 52nd district includes now?
Well, the 52nd district runs along the coast, takes in Coronado, Ocean Beach, Pacific Beach, some of most of La Jolla, and stops at the university campus and makes a hard east turn over to Poway, Mira Mesa, and Rancho Bernardo.
So it does include some of our inland areas east of I-15 out here as well. The district is fairly evenly split. I understand there's about 136,000 Democrats, 130,000 declined to state voters, and then 128,000 Republicans in that district. Which way do those declined to state voters tend to sway, Nancy?
They tend to be more liberal. I think people that live along the coast certainly have more interest in the natural world than some other areas, and so they tend to be more environmentally conscious and a little more progressive.
Right. And there's a total of four candidates in the race, we should add. There is a Republican, Jim DiBello, and then a no-party preference candidate named Ryan Cunningham. That's kind of an ironic name in a district that used to be represented by Congressman Duke Cunningham, who, of course, wound up with about 7 years in the slammer for,
right.
for corruption. So good likelihood you could wind up seeing even two Democrats make it into a runoff in this race.
It's possible. There is a probability that the Republican candidate is going to be well-financed, as is the incumbent.
Okay. So, Nancy, you're running as the Green New Deal candidate, taking on the incumbent Democrat. Listeners, a little bit of background on Nancy Cassidy. She is a California native. For 20 years, she's been the general manager of the Ocean Beach People's Food Cooperative, an organic store. She has spent 7 years as the governor's appointee to the Food and Agriculture Board in Sacramento. She's a lifelong Democrat. She spent 8 years as a pro-choice professional lobbyist in Sacramento. On the environmental field, she's been an activist opposing the San Onofre nuclear plant. And, perhaps most importantly for this race, she was a co-founder of the San Diego Climate Mobilization Coalition. She did run before in 1996 for Congress and took over a third of the vote in a three-way Democratic primary. That race was ultimately won by Republican Brian Bilbray. So, Nancy, tell us what compelled you to jump in and challenge an incumbent Democratic congressman based on the Green New Deal?
Well, Marian, I believe that we are in a climate emergency and we need to act like it. I believe that our elected representatives have a duty to warn when we are in danger. And this is not happening in the 52nd district. I've spent personal time and group time trying to get the present incumbent to realize we need to act boldly and decisively to handle this ever-worsening crisis with our climate.
Can you give us some actual facts about this? You mentioned a duty to warn. What would you like our listeners today to know about the climate crisis?
Well, first of all, we have scientific solutions that should be in place to mitigate the worst impacts. We are currently, as a global nation, putting up 110 million tons of carbon dioxide pollution every single day. At this rate, we have less than 8 years before that amount of pollution heats the planet beyond the 1.5 degree Celsius rise that science tells us is required if we are going to continue to have a predictable food supply.
So if there's no more food supply, basically we're talking about the potential extinction of humanity based on these latest dire predictions.
That is correct.
doesn't get any scarier than that. So tell us what the Green New Deal includes. I'm sure some people out there have heard it, may not understand exactly what that means.
There are actually two parts of the Green New Deal. There's the green part, and then there's the New Deal part. So the green part calls for a national mobilization of the country, an industrial mobilization that would build out the wind, water, and solar energy system and provide the country with a new grid, a smart grid, to transfer that energy around the country on a scale as if we were in a war. In addition, it calls for the conversion of 250 million trucks and cars, light trucks and cars, to electric motors. It also calls for climate smart agriculture, which is our best defense for sequestering carbon.
Very good. And I believe there's also things in there like replanting our forests and composting, and as you've mentioned, the conversion to vehicles that run on alternate fuels or are powered by electricity, which would all help reduce the amount of energy that we use, as well as converting that energy that we do have to have to make sure that it's all coming from sustainable and renewable resources, correct?
Correct. So that's the green side of the Green New Deal. The New Deal side says, in addition to these initiatives, we need to be providing medical care, Medicare for all, a single-payer universal coverage system for all of our citizens.
Super. And we'll get to all of the other aspects in a minute, but I had a couple of other questions on the environmental part of it. I understand that this would also help provide a lot of economic revitalization and jobs. How many jobs do you estimate would be created if the Green New Deal were rolled out?
Conservatively, it looks like about 6 million, and that compensates for the approximately 4 million members of the workforce in the fossil fuel industry that'll have to be retrained into the new energy system.
And these are not, you know, low-wage, dead-end jobs, right?
Not at all. These are technical jobs, human resources jobs. This is a massive retooling of the economy with the base of sustainable energy.
Correct. Now, as with all new technologies, there, you know, occasionally are some downsides. In East County, we've seen some projects, particularly some of the big wind projects, that were not entirely benign. There have been some issues, things like brush fires and blades being thrown off and lights flashing in people's windows and some of these things. Do you support recognizing that while we have to have a massive rollout, you know, to convert our energy away from the fossil fuels, do you believe that we need to have some smart reforms also in terms of where these things can and should be located to make sure that we're not substituting one set of problems for another set for the people that live there?
That's an excellent way of putting it. We definitely need to have oversight. We need to have regulation. And luckily, we have a blueprint that's been provided by the think tank at Stanford, headed by Dr. Mark Jacobson, where they have done, with much support from the feds, not from the Department of Energy, but actually from the Department of Defense, to computer model the new energy locations for the entire United States. This has taken about 9 years. The last 2 years, Dr. Jacobson and his team have been converting 139 countries because this Wow. is a global climate effort.
Yeah, that's so important. And it even includes things like wave and tide machines. There's a lot of really cutting edge, innovative stuff we may not have even seen in the beginning of everything yet to come. But we have to make it through those 8 years somehow. I think that it's important to note that in addition to contrasting yourself against Scott Peters, who hasn't gone far enough, in your opinion, in fully supporting a Green New Deal, but also to educate listeners a little bit about the Republican Party stance on the whole climate change issue, or at least the Republicans that are currently, you know, in control of the Senate and the White House. Can you address that?
Well, we believe that with a president who calls climate change a hoax, who has been rolling back the safeguards, and who is encouraging, if we can believe this, more coal production, the Republican Party of old seems to have been subsumed by this slavish devotion to a person who obviously does not know what he's talking about.
And President Trump, we should note, has also called for opening up the coastline right here off of California to offshore drilling, as well as fracking in other parts of California and many other parts of the United States as well, while not supporting conversion to cleaner, greener fuels.
I think it is not overstating to say this is actually a crime against humanity. The current fossil fuel industry is causing over 200,000 premature deaths a year in the United States due to pollution from these fossil fuels. So when you know those facts and you continue to not only encourage the activity, I think that people need to be aware that this is beyond just an incidental misunderstanding of the situation.
Now, we're going to be talking in a minute about some of the other initiatives that you support, some of which listeners may be asking, well, how would you pay for all of this? And I know when we were talking before we went on the air, you told me that part of the Green New Deal vision that you have would be for the United States to be able to actually sell energy off of all these new wind, solar, geothermal, everything else they come up with, energy, as part of what would be basically kind of like a national community choice energy program. In other words, instead of people writing their check every month to SDG&E or PG&E or whoever it might be, there would be an alternative for the United States government to be selling the power, hopefully cheaper than what people are paying for it now, but using the profit to put into other programs. Let's talk about some of the other programs. Go ahead and tell me about your healthcare plan.
Well, before we leave this subject, just remember that when you increase the workforce with good paying jobs, those people pay taxes into our system. So that's another source of revenue when we are being able to have good paying jobs in the new industry. The other part of the Green New Deal, which is the New Deal part that I think is as important, would provide medical coverage for all. It would also provide for public college to be tuition free, and it would provide for a number of new technologies that would be innovated as we look at new possibilities.
Yeah, all very exciting. I know we were chatting off air and the healthcare costs are just spiraling out of control. A lot of folks I know that are in that 55 to 65 age bracket, especially who aren't old enough for Medicare yet, are getting bills of, you know, like $1,000 a month for basically crummy healthcare plans, not very good healthcare plans, and still have high deductibles. And of course, if you're very poor, I guess there are subsidies, but for a lot of people who are middle class, they just can't even afford healthcare anymore.
Well, that is a big concern, especially for young families. So this idea that somehow Medicare for All is going to cost us more, we actually need to look at what we're paying now. Something as simple as your homeowner's insurance carries costs for medical care if someone is injured on your property.
Right.
Your car insurance has that same kind of rider. Mm-hmm. So there are these hidden, you might say, costs that we are already paying the people that accessed our emergency rooms because that's their only alternative. It's been studied and restudied in other industrialized countries. We know that their results are better and their costs are lower and everyone is covered as a right. And I think that for the United States to have anything less than that is unacceptable.
Very good. Thank you for sharing that. On the free college tuition to all public colleges, so that would mean things in California such as the University of California, the Cal State system, and some community colleges. You've mentioned that you also support student loan forgiveness.
Correct. I think college debt forgiveness makes good economic sense because it allows the young people who are coming out of college to be able to get into the workforce and then do those things that we all want to do, have families, buy homes, get ourselves situated financially so that we can actually look forward to a workforce that's productive and competitive with the rest of the world. Free college tuition and forgiveness of college debt is a actual economic driver rather than something that we need to look at as expensive for the country.
Yeah, there you go. It's basically an investment in the future of our children and the future of our country. Nancy, you have been a longtime champion of women's rights. And right now, we're at a time when hard-fought freedoms for women are under assault. There's really no other word for it. In Washington, in many states across the country, where we're seeing very extreme laws being passed, challenges being brought forward, with the Supreme Court probably one vote away from overturning Roe versus Wade, the historic abortion rights case. And of course, it's not just abortion. We're seeing
birth control
attack, basic pay equality for women. We still don't have an equal rights amendment, and that's about to be fought out again because now the Virginia legislature has flipped and they're pass it, and they would be the last state needed to approve it. I guess it'll be a court battle whether that gets to count after so many years or not. But can you comment on the importance of women's issues and why, in your opinion, that's something that we shouldn't just forget about amid all the other issues out there?
Well, let me just say my position about reproductive choice. If we allow the government to make that decision, current opinion says no abortions. But the same principle of allowing the government to decide this decision would in other times perhaps mandate mandatory abortions. So we have to look at this as a two-sided argument. It's just because things are running one way now. If the government is the decider, it opens the door to a very, very dire future.
Interesting point. We've certainly seen that in China, where they had the one-child policy for a long time, and women were forced to get abortions there.
But I also believe the attack on women is like the attack on Mother Earth. If we respected women, if we saw our role in society as the life givers, we would be able also to have the consciousness that our planet is life-giving. And furthermore, that we are all connected in this web of life. So I see them as coming out of the same kind of mentality of dominance, of disrespect.
In other words, it's about control, really, more than concern for the life of, you know, every fertilized egg. And I don't want to diminish that, but when we hear the term pro-life, so often they're only talking about the life of the fetus or the baby or whatever term you want to use, but we forget that there's a woman's life at stake, too.
Exactly.
In some cases, her life may actually be in danger carrying a baby to term, or her health may be in danger, or you may have a not really viable fetus that I had a friend where they found out in the seventh month that every organ was growing on the outside of the body. I mean, there's no way that that can be a viable child if it's born.
Right, correct. But more importantly, this is a private decision. It needs to be a personal decision. And the history of this subject has taken many twists and turns over the years. So we have had a moving line. It's not ever going to be decided on a faith alone. And that is why I think it needs to reside with the person that is the affected person, and that is the bearer of life.
We've been talking about domestic issues so far, but of course, foreign policy is much in the news right now. As we're recording this, it's right after we saw President Trump order the killing, some call it the assassination, of an Iranian General Soleimani, and that resulted in Iran retaliating by bombing U.S. military bases over there. And coming out of that, we then saw Iran accidentally, they say, shoot down a Ukrainian airliner because they thought maybe the U.S. was firing back at them. So a lot of consequences to that action. I would like to ask you, Nancy, if you could comment, please, on the current U.S. policy in Iraq and Iran, and whether you agree or disagree with the direction that things are going in and what you might do differently if you had a vote in Congress.
Well, let me say, first of all, that I don't think this is the first assassination that the United States has ever carried out. Secondly, we must confront a new reality. As a universe of people, of humans on the planet, we are facing an existential threat in our lifetime. And these excursions into foreign policy decisions that result in chaos and upset and distraction and, let me say, death to primarily non-combatant women and children, history shows.
Yeah.
They have to stop. This is not the way forward for life on planet Earth. So, like we tell our kids, the first thing we must do is recognize we are no longer going to be solving our problems by force. We must sit down. We must talk. We must mediate, arbitrate, communicate in order to solve problems that are human-made and human-solved.
And it should be noted, too, that all of those destructive things that happen in war, the explosions, the bombs, all of that contributes to the massive releases of the CO2 and all the
terrible
things that are contributing to climate change as well.
And let's talk about the cost. We've just passed a bill, that a budget that allows a $1.4 trillion upgrade of the United States nuclear arsenal, which we know we will never be able to use. Can you imagine if we were using that kind of money on the border as we face our crisis with immigration? This is where we should be directing our resources.
Yeah, and the national debt is going way up currently, so that's another problem.
That's another problem.
Listeners, if you just tuned in, we are speaking with Nancy Cassidy. She is a Democratic candidate running on a Green New Deal platform. She is challenging Democrat Scott Peters in the 52nd Congressional District. Nancy, where can people get more information about you and your candidacy?
Well, we're on all kinds of social media platforms, but the easiest thing is to go to the web, Cassidy for Congress, and we spell our name C-A-S-A-D-Y, and we're easy to find.
So CassidyForCongress.com. I am going to let you have the last word today, Nancy. Is there anything else you would like our listeners to know that we haven't already talked about here, or any elaboration on anything that we did bring up?
Well, I want to say that every day we wait to address this climate crisis increases our vulnerability and decreases our chances for survival. This is no longer what is possible. We must confront what is necessary for us to survive, and we must let young people know that they are not in this fight alone, and that's why I'm running in the 52nd District.
Very good. Yeah, I think if we look around the world and just look at the headlines in the last month, the massive worst ever wildfires in Australia, the worst ever wildfires burning the Amazon, the worst ever fires that we had in the last year right here in California, the melting of the polar caps in Greenland, and of course, 97% of the world's climate scientists warning us for some years now that climate change is real, that it isn't cyclical, and that man is the major contributor to the problem. So it's important, I think, for us to help get that word out, to talk to candidates that are concerned about what's happening in the effort to protect our world and all of the people on it. So, Nancy, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to join us today on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.